This is Vectis Radio. For the people, by the people.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and my very special guest today, Reg Hunt BEM, and that stands for, because I didn't know, British Empire Medal. And Reg is chairman of the Royal British Legion, the Bryston and District Branch. He's also met the Pope and saved not one, but two lives. So I think we've got some very interesting stories today from Reg. Welcome, Reg.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
So, as I said, you're chairman of the Royal British Legion in Bryston and District. How did all that come about?
Well, it started way back in about 74, when I was a member of a branch on the mainland, a North Bushy branch, and my father was a member, and we joined and got involved in the Poppy Appeal, and which is charities, is the best thing you could ever have, and it's the thing next to my heart, apart from my wife, of course. So, 64, I started off as a normal person in a Royal British Legion, and because of my height and stature, they invited me to take part as a standard bearer.
How tall are you, Rich?
6'3".
Right.
So I did a standard bearer course, and I passed. Became the standard bearer, and then through the years after carrying the standard for the Royal British Legion Bushy, I went in to go for a course to be a parade marshal. Today I'm still a parade marshal, but the deputy parade marshal of the county of the Isle of Wight.
And you do the, when we have the Remembrance Day service at Bryston.
Oh, yes.
You head that up,
don't
you?
Oh, yes, yes. Our branch, the North Bushy, Bryston District branch, started when I came over to the island in 2004. I heard that the Bryston District branch did have a Royal British Legion, but they passed off in 67 because they didn't have enough members. With a colleague called Jim Long, many people must know Jim Long, a very well respected gentleman.
Sadly no longer with us, but
absolutely
well loved and remembered. Yes.
Died at 101, no 100, and took part in raising funds for the Poppy Appeal when he was 95 doing a parachute jump.
Oh, I remember that. Wasn't that
92
fantastic?
Also. He said to me before he passed away, what he wanted to do is to do a wing walk. But the doctor said, no, Jim, can't do that.
I think two parachutes jump up 90 plus was really going.
Absolutely.
Sake, God,
and it was freezing cold because yes. I went there both times.
Where did he do it from?
Netherhaven. We got there one frosty morning. And there was a cloud cover, and they were saying, no, we won't do it today. And then suddenly a break, yes, we're going, and off went Jim in an aircraft, way up, way up, way up. And then all you looked at, and you see these people falling out, and I was told that was Jim. But I couldn't recognise him until he landed, because he's a little bit deaf, Jim was, at the time. And the instructor kept saying, pull your legs up, Jim, pull your legs up, Jim. And he's saying, hey, hey, and crash, they landed. But it was all right, it didn't break anything.
Oh, thank goodness for that. Let's start. But he had a military background,
he
didn't he?
He did indeed. He was taken prisoner in Singapore, and he served 3 years in a Japanese prisoner of war camp, and he suffered terribly. I took a party of Royal British Legion members over to the Arboretum in Staffordshire, and on that area there is a piece of railway which came from the Burma Railway, and I don't know how Jim did it, but he said this is what we worked on, and he told me the terrific stories about what he was doing and how he suffered, and he did suffer.
He was one brave man, wasn't he?
Absolutely.
Was he ex-RAF?
No, he was Army. He was in the... in fact, he was a Caledonian because he wanted to wear a kilt.
Any reason for that? No, just very Jim.
No, just Jim. Jim liked wearing a kilt.
Yeah, lovely. Absolutely lovely. So the pair of you...
Yeah, a pair of us, we started the Bryston and District Royal British Legion.
And that was in 2004, wasn't it?
2004. Yeah. We were with just 30 members, and we just carried on from there. We had a dedication of our standard, which was presented by Jim's wife, Anne, on because of Jim working for us as well, because Jim was a fundraiser extraordinaire. And so we had the standard, we've had drumhead ceremonies in the village, we've had, and on Remembrance Day. Now, Remembrance Day last year was one, pardon the pun, but a Remembrance Day to remember. We started at 10 o'clock, people arriving. The band of the Medina Marching Band was our band, which are affiliated to our branch. And they turned up in their beautiful uniforms, and so did the people. And it just grew and grew. We marched from a lane called Moortown Lane in village into the village itself, lined with people along the route. And after they passed, the band passed, and the scouts and the guides and all the youth groups, the people joined in as well, and they marched with the band. We got as far as the reading rooms in Bryston, and that's where most of the Royal British Regiment members, because some of them are a bit can't walk very far, and they just like to walk from that reading rooms to the memorial. Now, at the memorial in village outside the church, I stood there as I'm the parade marshal, and I looked back along the road towards the paper shop and the village shop, and a sea of faces. I've never seen so many people coming to our village for a Remembrance Day service. It was one of those wonderful days. And then after a small service outside at the memorial with wreath laying, and also myself reading the names on the memorial, we had a service inside the church. And again, it was so packed, people had to stay outside.
What do you think that, because I've had the honour of laying a wreath on behalf of the Merchant Navy because of my father's association with that, and that was the year before, and that was a wonderful service. And what was extra special, what brought all these people to the village this year, do you think?
I think it was the conflicts that are all over the world, and also it was the last conflict we've had, or it's still going on in Afghanistan, and it was people coming out to pay their respects to the fallen, and also for the members of the three forces, the Army, the Navy and the Air Force.
Yeah.
That was...
It's quite something, isn't it? Because Bryston is quite a beautifully idyllic country village. It's quite small. So to see all the marching bands, and like you see, to see the scouts and the girl guides and everybody coming through, and to hear your voice taking command of the whole ceremony, it's amazing, isn't it?
It really was, yes. And we had no mic, unfortunately, so I had to raise my voice a little bit louder.
I can't imagine you needed one, Reg. I don't know why you're working with one today, to be quite honest.
Thank you.
No, you've got a fantastic voice.
And thank
you
very much.
Like I say, you completely take control of proceedings, which is what we all need, and it's wonderful. It's part, you are so integral now to that ceremony.
Thank you very much.
Lovely.
Thank you very much.
And you were telling me off air that in 2004, the Royal British Legion Bryston District Branch had 30 members.
That's right.
And how many have you got now?
We've got about 105 now.
That's wonderful.
And it's just growing. And on Saturday, if I may put this through.
Yeah, please do.
On Saturday in Bryston, the Wilberforce Hall, we have a coffee morning, and it's a coffee, cakes and biscuits, and it's going to be sort of a recruiting.
Can we just repeat that word, cakes?
Cakes.
Reg, because I find that does bring people like me.
And they're all homemade as well.
Nay, that's the other two words you needed to put in there. Homemade cake, okay.
The wives of the members of the branch and members of our branch have got together to make the cakes.
And they make a mean sponge, don't they?
Oh,
they
do. They
really
indeed.
Do.
They do indeed.
So if you want to sample some of those goodies, it's the Wilberforce Hall in Bryston, opposite the Thatch newsagent there, and it's 10 o'clock till 12 o'clock this Saturday.
£2.
Just £2 to get in, and it's then do you get your tea and
that's
your cake?
That's their keys.
So
nothing else
to pay. No. Well, that's a bargain, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Good
yeah, really
right.
is.
Brilliant. Yeah, I'll be there. Lovely.
Okay.
That's my Saturday morning sorted. And it's, so there's the British Legion, which we all know and associate you with, but you've also, I mean, your BEM, your British Empire Medal that you were awarded in 1993, you got for your huge amount of work that you've been doing for charity and fundraising.
Absolutely, yeah. In 1983, a colleague of mine had a young son with learning difficulties, and he had just finished a walk with other colleagues in the police force, about five of them, walking the Ridgeway. And he happened to know about my fundraising for Royal British Legion Poppy Appeal and asked me to come on board to raise funds for MenCap Hertfordshire, which I did. And we usually walk on at Christmas. This was one of the functions, or one of the projects, with a sleigh loaded with toys and presents, other presents. And we walk from Watford to Selbarnes Hospital, around about 17 miles, along the road, hauling this sleigh. And people are coming out from houses, they're coming in their cars behind us, when it got known, because we did it for about 6 or 7 years, and they were coming out. And one story that sticks in my mind was when an Arctic lorry was pulling up behind us and sounding its klaxons, and I'm waving him, because I was dressed as a snowman at the time, but I heard him, and I kept, I'm on the outside, of course, being in white, so people can see me and don't run over, and in front, behind the sleigh. And he didn't want to go, and he called me back, and I went back to his cab, and he opened the window, and he said, I heard this sleigh pull was on the road, he said, and I was on the A40, and I was in a cafe with some of the other lads, and we had an instant whip round for you, and here's the money. And he gave me £80 that they had a collection in the cafe on the A40, and that went towards another project that we were working on at the time, and that was to have a centre built, which was called the Adolescent Special Care Unit, for children with learning difficulties. When they reach the age of 18 in the ward, they then disappear, or in the hospital, they disappear into the ward. And it was an idea brought up by one of the members of the hospital that if they had an adolescent special care unit, they could put these 18-year-olds in that unit until they reach the age of 21, 22, and then with all the expertise that they would receive, maybe they could arrange having them, four or five of them, living in a bungalow and being assisted by a carer in the public, out in the public. So that was absolutely brilliant. We raised quite a bit of money that other ways as well doing that.
That's incredible. And you must look back on that, because that's where it all began, I suppose, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. As I said, charity is next to my heart. And things came up. Then, unfortunately, Graham, my colleague, passed away. And I became the chairman of the MenCop, we called ourselves. Now, MenCop, why do we call ourselves MenCop? Well, this is another story. Shall we go on
the
story,
go on,
Tony? Right. In 1983, we decided to do a project, my colleagues and I. We were going to go to see the Pope in Rome.
As you do.
As you
said
you
that
do.
So casually.
Pope John Paul II. What we did, we thought, how are we going to take, what are we going to do? We wanted to raise funds for this adolescent special care unit. And we also had another project we were working on as well, but that's another subject. But this project was going to raise money for the adolescent special care unit. What we'd do, we'd write letters to, well, have letters written for all the people in Hertfordshire. And we'd ask them to send a letter to the Pope wishing him well, because Pope, if you know the story, Pope John Paul was shot, and he was shot in the side. And we were invited to an audience with the Pope on the second year of him being Pope. And what we did then, we asked for these letters, but we asked for a donation towards the Adolescent Special Care Unit. Well, believe me, Hertfordshire raising funds was absolutely incredible. The letters came in the thousands, and likewise the donations. Now, how are we going to deliver the letters? Right. We had another little discussion in somebody's house. We're going to walk to Rome. We've done the Ridgeway. We're going to walk Rome. Right, okay, we'll
walk
do
to
that.
Rome from Watford.
From Watford.
Right, okay. How many miles is that, Rich?
I don't know. But when we thought about it, then another idea was brought in. Why don't we dress as centurions?
While you're at it.
While we're at it, because if near Watford is a place called St Albans, and there's a place called the Verulanum. And the Verulanum is a big old Roman town. And what we were going to do is to take a statue that was found in the ruins, or a copy of the statue, back to Rome and give it to people in the Vatican. We had no idea this was coming up, the next bit of the story. But we thought, no, walking to Rome with visas, pulling a chariot, dressed as centurions.
Yeah.
And if you think of Romans and they had sandals on in those days, policemen's feet are not the same without big boots. So we shelved it. We put out adverts again for various other ways of getting to Rome. A coach company came forward. They said they'd put a coach in for us for nothing. They would pay for all the diesel to Rome. Wow, that was terrific. That was a start. Right, day of leaving St Albans, that was the farewell, goodbye. Dressed as in our dress, proper dress of white gloves.
In your uniform.
In uniform.
Thank goodness. And you promised me you didn't have a centurion costume in your
suitcase. No, we had none of that. Lovely. None of that. So then we went off down to Rome. Prior to that, I was involved in a twinning of two towns in Watford.
No, hang on, Reg, you can't go. But then we went down to Rome. But then back, no, we're stuck in Rome and this the meeting of the Pope. Come on, this is
all right, we're on the way to Rome. We called in to a place called Mainz, where I was twinning two towns, helping twin two towns. And we saw the police in Mainz had waited for us at the on one of the Autobahn ramps. They've been there for about 3 or 4 hours. We arrived, flashed our lights, woke them all up, and it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and we drove from on the Autobahn into Mainz, where a restaurant had kept open for us for a meal. Typical English meal, stewed pork and onions.
Lovely.
We'd just come off the ship. Yeah. Anyway, we went on from there. We wished them all well. They loaded our coach with, well, drink and also food, and we carried on down. And we got to Rome. We went to a hotel because Graham's wife, he was alive then, Graham's wife was something to do with a PR with Thistle Hotels, and she arranged for us to stay at a hotel which overlooked the square of St Peter's. From our bedroom windows we could see the spires and all the statues around the St Peter's. While we were having a sort of a cup of tea and a chat, in come some gentlemen in very, very smart dress, and they said, tomorrow morning we will collect you at 7 o'clock and take you to the square. Right, fine. We waited for them. They arrived. We went off to the square. Now, coming up to the square, and this is the second audience after the Pope had been shot, everybody had to be searched. Likewise, the five bobbies. They put metal detectors on it. The only problem was we had buttons which were metal.
Of course you did, yes.
and it just went berserk. So they called for the chief of police. He came and he said, well, they're British bobbies. Why search British bobbies? Leave them with me. And we went in with this chief of police. Went into the square. And there was a beautiful place. Oh, it was absolutely laid out fantastic. Hundreds and hundreds of chairs, of seats. And a gentleman came walking towards us with a camera strung around his neck. And he said, oh, British bobbies. Not seen British bobbies like this. Like you here. What are you here for? We told him the story. It was Lord Snowden.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it was a Pope, actually.
No, Lord Snowden taking pictures for the Sunday Times. He worked for the Sunday Times. And, well, we went into the square. We got to our seat. And while we were in the seat...
So you've had your photo taken by Lord Snowden?
Yes, yeah. Wow. It went into the Sunday Times.
Fantastic.
Oh, he was working also for the Daily Herald, yes. The paper then as well. Wonderful. That went in there, pictures in there as well. Well, 11 o'clock, before 11 o'clock, all hymns broke out in the square. Fantastic. Everybody sang in their language. Everybody knew the hymns. They joined in. It was hilarious. Oh, not hilarious. It was hilarious because people were coming up. They couldn't believe this is British bobbies in the square of St Peter in 90 degree temperature in black or blue serge, and coming up and asking us, you wear this all the time, and where's your guns? Well, my colleague, being a bit of a wag, he said, well, we don't carry guns. We have a little stick down a trouser, which is called a truncheon. Yeah, it's this chap was saying to Graham. He's saying, well, what happens if a man comes to you facing you with a gun? Well, Graham says, we whip out the truncheon and we stand there with the truncheon in front of us. He said, well, but if this man shoots you, what happens? Well, he said, we move around rather fast and we knock the bullet away with a truncheon. But that's just another story. Mm. But we went into the square, 11 o'clock, as I say, the bells were ringing. Three helmets of the Bobbies disappeared into the crowd. Now, we were going to have pictures taken, which we've already had pictures taken, but lots of pictures taken. British Bobbies with their helmet, which is the main thing, went into the crowd behind us of the English-speaking nations.
Presumably you'd remove those.
Yeah. And they went off, and they came back absolutely crammed full of money. Now, we hadn't gone out there to do that. We'd gone out to deliver letters from our people of the Hertfordshire. Well, we couldn't give the Pope, which we then found out, we were going to meet, these great big black plastic bags full of letters. So we had to sort out a few letters and put them in white vellum envelopes ready for the presentation. As I say, at 11 o'clock, in comes the Pope. He drives around the square. He comes around one of the lanes, which is right opposite us.
In his Popemobile.
Yeah. Got ready to receive. Then he went off again. He went off around 80,000 people in that square. Came back. Came down from his Popemobile and walked straight across to the Five Bobbies. Couldn't believe it. Absolutely couldn't believe it. Spoke to each one of us. Spoke to me.
What did he say?
Well, funny thing is, where I was, a local Bobby is called Abbots Langley, and near Abbots Langley is a village called Bedmond, and that was the birthplace of the only English Pope, Pope Adrian IV. And he spoke to me about that. Now, how he knew, I had no idea, but I found out later by being a bit of a detective.
Okay,
I found
out afterwards. Okay, so he spoke to you about that, yeah.
He spoke to me about that. We presented him with the letters he handed to his secretary and other people, and then he went up to the square, up to the throne, blah blah blah. The whole series went off. He blessed everybody in the square. He stood up and he said, now I'd like to introduce the square to five English Bobbies. Well, we couldn't believe it. Everybody that gets introduced throws rosaries, roses, flowers, hats in the air when they're introduced. The five of us stood up and we just turned to the Pope and saluted. The whole square erupted. It erupted into a tremendous... We all got lumps. We got lumps. I'm getting lumps in my throat now talking about it. But then the audience finished and he's coming down from the throne. And a lady who's behind us in the English-speaking nations come through, about 14 people, and grabbed us on the shoulder and said, can you get my son to the front? He's come from Mexico and we'd love him to meet the Pope. He's severely handicapped. He's got braces on both legs. He can't sit still. His head rolls and he has to be held, supported. Right, we said. We broke rank from the front of this square. We went back to where this boy was in his wheelchair. We saw what he was like. We picked him up and we carried him over the heads of all the people.
Goodness
to me. The barrier.
Yeah.
Pope was coming down and we called him. And he said, or rather the secretary turned round and put his hand up as though he's like stopping traffic and said, and shook his head. You see, we were told after this all happened that the Pope never returned to the same people twice. But before he got in his Popemobile, the secretary put his hand on the shoulder or the elbow of the Pope and spoke to him. The Pope looked up and came back to the five boys with this severely handicapped boy sitting on the barrier and put his hands on his shoulder. The boy who couldn't sit still, his head was rolling. He sat still. And the Pope blessed him. For about 2 minutes he sat there stock still.
Yeah.
And then the Pope came along and blessed the five Bobbies.
Oh, Reg.
Oh,
oh dear.
That really...
Yeah.
But after that, We took the boy back to the wheelchair. The Pope had gone, and we took him back. People were coming up and asking, you touched the Pope, can you touch this, and the rosaries and things like that. But we carried the boy back to his wheelchair. We put him in the wheelchair. Now, the father was there of the boy, and the money we had. Now, what are we going to do with all this money? We can't take it back to England because it's all different denominations. We give it to the father with this severely handicapped boy. There was about £800, we think, about that much. So we gave it to the father, but he didn't want it. No, don't give it to me. I don't want it. We did find out later that he was an owner of various tankers in the Gulf. And so we just said, right, okay, we'll give it to you. And he took it.
Fantastic. Oh, well, what goodness me, what a heartwarming story. Thank you so much for sharing that. It's made a lot of people's days. Lovely. So we're going to have to go for a very quick break, and we'll make it very quick so that we can get back and hear lots more from Reg Hunt, who is the chairman of the Royal British Legion, Brycestone and District. Okay, thanks for listening. Speak to you in a minute. Bye-bye.
Stay social and get in touch. Add us on Skype. It's vectis.radio. The World Wide Web never felt so local.
Hello and welcome back to this week's edition of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and my special guest, Reg Hunt, BEM. Now, just before the break, Reg, we were talking about your audience with the Pope, John Paul II, and that they'd had a big collection while you were there, and they'd passed your helmets around, your Bobby's helmets around, and come back with, you think, about £800 for a severely disabled boy that was in the crowd.
Correct.
And you managed to eventually persuade the father to take this money, but there's a bit of a PS to that story, isn't there?
Yes, there is indeed. The father took the money, and unknown to us, he gave it to a poor tribe of Mexican Indians. And during one of our patrols on the motorway, my colleague and I, the M1, we used to patrol that. We got a radio call, Whiskey 7, would you return to base? Which we did. You've got to go straight to Heathrow Airport. And at Heathrow Airport, you've got to go to Customs Excise. There's a parcel waiting for you. So we went to Heathrow. We went to the Customs Excise. And there was a parcel on the counter waiting for us to see. We opened it. And in that parcel, there was a hand-carved, hand-painted statue of Our Lady of Guadalupe, Our Lady of Guadalupe, patron saint of Mexico. The father who gave the money to these poor tribe of Indians told them the story of the Five Bobbies and the Pope, and as a thank you, they gave us this statue, which I take round various, well, I used to, because I'm living on the island now and it's still on the mainland, but I used to take it round to talk into various ladies' clubs and things like that.
Oh, that's wonderful, isn't it? That's brilliant. And there's so much more to you than meets the eye, isn't there? Because you've done all this wonderful charity work, and like you said, you were a Bobby on the beat in Watfordshire Hearts, but that started off because you were special, weren't you?
I was indeed, I started that. I worked in the print before the police, and while I was in the print, I joined the special constabulary. And I was taken out on various operations and things like that, and they trusted me so much. But one of the things happened to me when I was on holiday with my family was down in Bude in Cornwall. And in Bude, I don't know if your listeners ever know, been down to Bude, but there's a swimming pool which is open-air swimming pool, and the sea is flooded in and flooded out, and the pool is left. Well, I was on the beach with my two children, Tracy and Chris, and Jen, of course, my wife, and a shout came up from the swimming pool, is there anybody can help? And with my hairs stuck up on the back of my neck, I went over and had a look. And in the middle of that, well, almost in the centre of the pool, there was a child with a face, a young lady with a face down in the pool. And likewise, I just looked around and everybody was pointing, so I just dived in and went over to her, swam over to her, turned her over, and she had a little bit of seaweed in her throat. She was blue around her ears and blue on the corner of her lips. cleared her throat, cleared her mouth, and I tried to do the resuscitation in the swimming pool. But as everybody should know, that you can't do resuscitation unless you have a firm base.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I swam back to the bank, or to the pier, the wall, and willing hands pulled the young lady out, pulled me out also. And that's it. Nobody did anything. And I'm saying, anybody else, no resuscitation, and nobody did. So I continued resuscitation. The young lady did cough. She was sick. She brought up a lot of seaweed. And a gentleman came up, tapped me on the shoulder. He said, I'm a doctor. I'll take over now. You get yourself dry. And while I was doing that, I could hear the sound of the ambulance coming. The sirens were so welcome. So, anyway, I covered this young lady up. A blanket came from somewhere. I covered the young lady up. I put her on my shoulder, and we carried her, with the doctor behind me, up the steps to the top. And there was the ambulance crew willingly taking the young girl, took my details, and off she went. But before she went, and I was going back down the steps to the swimming pool, a lady grabbed me by the shoulder and said, I want to know who you are, where you come from, and what you're doing here in Cornwall. So I told her all the story. Off they went. And my family and I spent the rest of the day on the beach. Went back to the caravan, only to find a police car outside the caravan.
It was the woman you spoke to was the girl's mother, wasn't she?
Yes, she was the girl's mother. Now, I got a bit worried there. I thought I was going to hear some bad news. But instead of that, the police officers shook me by the hand and said, that young girl is pulled through. The mother wants more details, and we want more details as well for our report. So I gave them the details. Came back to Watford after the holiday 3 weeks later, and I got summoned up to the police headquarters in Welwyn Garden City, Chief Constable, and he told me he'd received a letter from the Chief Constable of Cornwall explaining and telling him about the story of what I've just done, and with that he gave me the Chief Constable's commendation for saving a life.
Brilliant. And that's not the only accolade you've had, is it?
Well, no, not really. No, no.
He said modestly. No, come on, tell us, Fred.
Oh, well, you mean the BEM?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Tell us where
now,
that came from.
The village I worked is called Abbots Langley. And I was there for 10 years. And the best thing about it, I was a bobby on a beat. And I had a bike.
You've still got that bike,
I've still
you?
Got the bike at home as well. I bought that bike from the police force, and I've still got it.
Do you still ride it?
I still ride it.
Really?
And also got the cape and the helmet that I used to wear
that's
as well.
Fantastic.
I've got all
You're going to have to do a drive-by, well, a fundraising drive-by in Bryston. Oh, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, I've still got all that. I've got all my
cape. Yeah. Is it one of those massive black ones?
Yeah, it's a big cape, yeah. Yeah, we've got heavy when it's
snowed. I was talking about the
bike, not the cape. Yeah. Oh, the bike, yeah, the big old bike,
Fantastic.
Yeah, Raleigh, three-speed.
Oh, wonderful.
Three-speed Raleigh, and then when I finished my career as a local bobby, I was on a motorway bobby for 7 years.
You weren't on your Raleigh on the motorbike?
No, I was taken off of that and put as a local bobby.
Yeah.
But from high-speed cars and being an advanced driver, dealing with multitudes of accidents, we're going off the subject a bit, I'm afraid, but going in onto a three-speed Sturmey Archer Raleigh pedal cycle, which was a bit of come down.
I bet you were a demon on it, though, weren't you?
Well, the children or the youngsters that got a bit out of hand didn't know I was about until I turned up.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm standing,
the Cape Crusader.
I'm standing in doorways and they walk past me. They don't know I'm there because I'm in. The helmets at the time were black helmets with a black badge. But we then had to go to silver badges and that gave the game away. But anyway, apart from that, with the schools, I used to go into the schools and I thought they had this tremendous collection in the village when I went to Rome. And I thought, as a thank you, I would organise a carol concert in the middle of the village. I would get a 40-foot trailer, I would have quite a band, and I'd ask the school if they could supply their choirs, which they did, and people came with their families.
You don't do things by halves, Reg, do you? This is why you've got where you've got.
I wanted a pig roast, but I couldn't have a pig roast. So there on, we had the carol concert, and because of all my work, I was getting into schools, I was taking schools for... a whole afternoon sometimes on and assemblies. There were five schools in the village, a senior school and a private school I used to get into, as well as the churches, as well as the Father's Training College and the convent. And with all that work, and then I started having another idea of having a run round the village, a 10-mile run. It was 10 mile because I measured it on my bike.
Of course
but
you did.
This came up, and it's called the Abbots Langley Tough 10. And that, my ladies and gentlemen listeners, goes back to well back into 1983. I started the run, and today it's still going.
Oh, isn't that
and
wonderful?
I get invited over in October to do a PR on the radio.
And do you do a little trot round?
Oh, I've done that. No, I've done it. I don't want to do it. Oh, dear. No, it's too hilly. Abbots Langley is known for hills, and that's why it's called the Abbots Langley Tough 10.
Yeah.
It's on the 3C's calendar for runs. And
wonderful.
So loads of people, I mean, hundreds of people take part. It's now a 10K, 5K, 8K.
I bet they loved you, didn't they, in Abbots Langley? All the kids and the families.
When it came to
bringing the community together and doing all this fundraising.
When it came to my 10 years, I'd been a village bobby. New sort of management took over the police. And it started that they've got to move around a few people, and one of the people to move around was PC Hunt, and they moved me off to Oxy, another London overflow, to be the local bobby there. And the people of Abbots Langley, the letters came in hundreds to the council, to the chief constable, saying, why move PC Hunt? It's done such a good job.
So they were up in arms.
They were up in arms. And then suddenly I got a letter from 10 Downing Street, Maggie Thatcher.
Fred, you can't believe these stories.
Been awarded the BEM.
Wow.
So that's how I received it.
And so you got the letter. Did you, what happened? Did you have to go to the palace, or how does it work?
No, not the palace, no. The Lord Lieutenant of Hertfordshire, Bowes Lyon, was the cousin to the Queen Mother.
Yes.
He presented it to me at a presentation evening of medals, where I was received the BEM and also long service and good conduct for police work as well.
Wonderful. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And very, very well deserved.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, fantastic.
But to go back to the Royal British Legion.
But sorry, can I just say, did you get to keep your job in, you know, or did you have to go to Oxy?
I did go to Oxy. And
how?
That's where I retired.
Right.
That's another reason.
Yeah, okay, I see.
So that was it. That
what a
was
shame,
the story.
Because you'd done all that wonderful
One of the things also we arranged was, when I was in the police going, raising money for various children with learning difficulties, was having a hangar decorated.
An aircraft hangar.
Hangar.
Not a coat hangar.
Which is now the studio for Harry Potter in Leavesden.
Whoa.
One of the biggest hangars.
Yes, must be
for
enormous.
900 people to sit down to dinner and dance on a 40s night.
But you couldn't do that with the planes in there, so.
No, the people who owned the planes, kind enough, moved the planes, and they bought tickets to come to the 40s night as well.
How obliging!
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the aircraft we had in there was a Catalina flying boat. And now they had to fold the wing tips up to get it into the hangar. And under the wings, I had a Spitfire and a Hurricane. That's the two fighter planes of the Second World War that was well known. And we had everybody in fancy dress. I was only corporal at the time.
Yeah.
And I was dressed up with on parade outside the entrance, collecting tickets with a broom, as doing my present arms and doing drill outside the hangar.
And what was your costume?
Well, I was a corporal.
A corporal.
Just a corporal.
Oh, thank goodness.
And everybody else was admirals.
I thought you were going to resurrect the Roman centenary.
Oh, no. There was colonels, majors, admirals, and all dressed up in a higher rank. And all nurses, of course. My wife, Jen, she dressed up as a nurse as well. And again, I know I'm saying what I've done, but you can't do it without a lady behind you. And I thank my wife, Jen, because she's been a brick.
How long have you been married?
We've been married 55 years.
Wow. And two children?
Two children, and they've got, and I've got five grandchildren.
Lovely.
Or and we've got five grandchildren.
I bet they just adore you as a dad. I bet you're a wonderful granddad and a fantastic dad.
Well, I suppose so, yeah.
Oh, no. What a lovely thing to have, you know, somebody like you to sort of talk to all your mates about and say, look what he did. Look what my dad achieved. It's wonderful. Really fantastic. Yeah. And you, I've spotted on you're a Freemason, aren't you?
I am indeed, yes. I've been a Freemason since 1979. And I'm now a member of the West White Lodge, which meets in Osborne Road.
I was wondering if we haven't got a lot of time left, but if you could just help perhaps debunk a few of the myths that surround the Freemasons and it being a secret society, nobody's allowed to know
what
goes on.
One of the myths that we love to squash. We are not a secret society. We are now open to the public. We took part in the last year in the Isle of Wight Day. You may have seen the members dressed in their uniforms and in their regalia, and we raise funds. We are, I should think, almost the second largest fundraising thing in the country. We have just sent out a lot of money to the last problem.
Yeah. Yes.
Can't think what it
is at the moment. So you do all the fundraising, you do the good work, but I think you'll agree that people perhaps misunderstand, and there is quite a lot of mythology is growing up around the Freemasons.
Yeah,
not all of it is good.
No, that's true.
I'm wondering, why do you think that is? Why do you think some people are a little bit wary of it?
I think it's because they didn't know or don't know what it's about. But we have now a caravan that goes around to all the shows, and it's going to be on show at the Chael Show of Freemasonry today. You can see and talk to Masons and see what we do.
How would that differ from something like the Rotary Club? Yeah, I know, because that... He does a lot of good work as well.
I'm not sure, really. We're all sort of tied with the same brush. Yeah. We all raise funds.
Yes,
and,
yes. Can anyone join?
Anybody can join.
Even me? As a woman?
21. Yeah, there are Lady Masons.
Is that relatively new?
That's been going quite a while as well.
Yeah. It wasn't always the case, though, was it?
No. There's two Lady Mason lodges on the island.
Okay.
And there are six Masons lodges on the island.
Okay, and can you talk about the handshake, or can't we go there?
There's nothing secret about the handshake. It's just welcoming people and talking to people, really, like you ordinarily do when you're out in the street. You just shake hands with them, that's it. Mm.
And do you have this rather odd ceremony with an apron and all this business?
Well, the apron you can see the aprons, and it tells you the story of the aprons. There are 3 degrees you have to go through in Freemasonry. There's the white apron. There's the normal apron with a border with 2 little rosettes on, and then there's a 3-rosette apron, and then you progress through to various other rosettes as well, or aprons.
So how many in a lodge?
Well, I think the one I'm in at the moment is around about 37, and other lodges are larger still. And it's really a well worth thing to look at and think of coming in to see.
And is your key mission and remit to raise funds?
Oh, it's me, a charity.
Yeah, but I mean, sorry, I meant the Freemasons.
Is
that what they're all about? Is there other aspects
to it? No, it's raising funds and looking after the health of other people as well.
Okay.
I mean, the money that's been sent out to various disasters, the first disasters... that came up, the Masons are there first off, sending the money out to those disaster spots.
Yeah, I think it's a shame it's had that sort of spectre over it for quite a while, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. As I say, the thing is, if you have the doubts, do come along to where the caravan's going to be and just keep reading the paper. Maybe, I don't know if it's in today's County Press, the other evening I was presenting £800 to the bus shelter on behalf of the West White Lodge and the Tom Langton Fund.
And the bus shelter is?
The bus shelter is for homeless people, and also they've done a power of good in the town. And they've now moved to Parkhurst, I believe, because the festival's coming up to where they are. But they are a very, very well worth charity.
Yeah. So in all your good works that you've achieved throughout your life, what's the thing you are most proud of, Reg?
What am I most proud of? I think the most proud thing I've done, apart from, I think it's the boy from Mexico, to see what happened when the Pope put his arms on that boy's shoulders and he sat still. And the mother and father couldn't believe it. He hadn't sat still for such a long time. And the welcome we got in Rome, being Bobby's, five Bobby's. Mm. And I think that's the one that sticks in my mind. And I mean, we've done other things, being in the charity called Mencop. It was called because a gentleman who was one of the Thompson newspapers said, why don't you call yourselves Mencop? Came to a farewell dinner when we went to Rome.
That was a play on Mencap, wasn't
yeah,
it?
That's yeah, that's right, play on Mencap. Mm. And we called ourselves Mencop. So, and we bought a bungalow for handicapped children in Clanbed Rock in North Wales, and that was free. The children go free holiday for a school or hostel or family, even for a free holiday in Clanbed Rock in North Wales.
That's brilliant. Where do you think this sort of altruistic side of your nature came from, to want to help others?
I think it was when I was a scout, I think. Yeah. When I was a Boy Scout, I think that's, you could say that. And I was an Army cadet, and then I was all sorts of things.
That was just innate, something.
Yeah, it's just there, it's the back of my mind, you know. The wife said, we're coming over to the island, and we're retiring. We're not going to do anything over there. And now I've started the Royal British Legion.
Famous last words, Jen. Famous last words.
Good old Jen.
Yeah, no, well, she, like you say, she's the power behind the throne.
Oh,
really,
absolutely,
isn't she?
Absolutely. Wouldn't yeah. be out. A good woman always behind you.
Yes, no, and I saw you at one of the fundraising dances, and you and Jen took to the floor, and you're quite the couple, aren't you? I mean, very light-footed. Yeah, brilliant.
Practice through the years.
It was lovely to see.
Thank
fantastic.
You very much. Thank
fantastic
you very much.
Fantastic to see. That was a very special night, wasn't it?
It was indeed, yeah. Yeah. Was that was the Wilberforce Hall?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Well, every year, because of the Royal British Legion Bryston, we hold a dinner every year at one of the hotels and it's for a big thank you from me, really, for the help they've given me raising money for the poppy appeal through the many years that we've been going. We're 2004 and we're now 2017 and still going strong.
And any thoughts of you? I know you've retired from the police, but anything retiring from public life?
I don't think so. I'm always going to be there.
Oh,
when
good.
Everybody wants to ask me to try and help raise money. In fact, I'm the charity steward of the, or was the charity steward of the West White Lodge. And people, if you want to try and raise funds and you want a little bit more help, try the Masons.
Yeah. But you're really, I'd say you're the go-to guy, aren't you, in Bryston, if somebody needs a hand
well, yes,
and advice, if they're trying
right.
to do something and set
that's
something
right.
up themselves.
Yeah, yeah, that's
you'd,
right.
Would, you'd a
I'll
great
be
person
there.
To talk to and
absolutely.
Show them the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, well,
yeah.
I have loved talking to you today. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing these wonderful stories. And just to remind everyone that this Saturday, so that's tomorrow, 10 to 12 at the Wilberforce Hall, there'll be a coffee morning with tea, coffee and delicious homemade cake. And that's in aid of the Royal British Legion, isn't it, Reg? It's £2 on the door, but then you get your tea and coffee thrown in for free. So really lovely way to spend your Saturday. And you can get to meet the man himself, because you'll definitely be there, won't you, Reg?
I will be.
Yeah,
yeah,
fantastic. Yeah. So you get to shake his hand. Okay, well, thank you all for listening. It's been a joy as always. And please follow us on Twitter at Vectis Radio and Facebook. And if you fancy a career in broadcasting, why not check out the Vectis Radio Training School at www.4ps.org.uk. Not just for training in radio or broadcasting, but also perhaps if you're going for an interview, if you just left school and you want to build up your confidence or put it on your CV. Fantastic, fantastic thing for young people to do. Okay, that's free too. That's free up until the 8th, I think it's 16 to 24. So a brilliant initiative. Come along to Vectis, talk to our leader, Ian Mack, about that. He'd love to speak to you. Okay, thanks again, and have a smashing weekend, and I'll speak to you again next week. www.vectisradio.com.